issue in the news this week do you want to discuss in this edition of The Week in Review? I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on this Friday, November 8th. I have a list of political topics in my hands right now that I will run by our two guests from different perspectives. But we want to know what issue, what news story mattered most to you? Or did you find the most interesting or significant? Or do you want to know more about? Maybe you just want to spout off or sound off on it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our two guests today are Eugene Kane, a columnist and blogger from Milwaukee. His writings appear on Sundays in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Good morning, Eugene.
Hey there, Joy. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for being with us again. And Owen Robinson also joins us. Owen is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Eugene.
All right, let's start with Tuesday's elections. Lots of stuff happened, but I don't even know really where to start. So I'm going to ask Eugene, what stood out most to you? What message do you think voters were sending when they, for example, they narrowly elected a Democrat for governor in Virginia? They resoundingly reelected a Republican, Chris Christie, in New Jersey. What stands out to you there?
Well, in terms of the latest election, because I didn't have really any local rooting interest nationally, Chris Christie, I mean, I think it's interesting that he is being propped up by some to be the GOP alternative candidate. Well, I've heard somebody say the alternative reasonable candidate for the GOP in 2016. So it's always interesting to see how he's being perceived nationally, because he does come across as a kind of different conservative. So it'd be interesting to see what they make of him in the next couple of years.
So, Owen, do you think that Chris Christie is the lead story from this week's election?
I don't think so. I think he was predicted to win by landslide. He did win by landslide. I think that's a lot of positive feeling after his management of Hurricane Sandy and everything, or Tropical Storm Sandy, and that. So I think that's a lot of positive reaction to him. And he's a very charismatic person. I think, you know, a lot of the media, and I think, frankly, a lot of the left would like him to be the GOP front runner, but he's going to have a really tough time getting through the primaries in a presidential election, because he's not a conservative. He's a Republican. He's not a conservative. But I think the more interesting story actually came out of Virginia, where McAuliffe was predicted to win by a landslide. He was up by, you know, double digits going into the last few weeks of that election, and he won by just a couple points. And what really turned it, you know, and that's despite Obama campaigning for him and Clinton and all these other folks, and that's because the news really turned in the last few weeks of that election to Obamacare. And I think that really showed how toxic Obamacare is to Democrats going into this next session, which is why you saw the senators, the Democratic senators who were up for reelection, really panicking and going to talk to Obama and really starting to be vocal against Obamacare right now. And I thought that was really the message that came out of that election.
Yeah, so do you think Obamacare is hurting Democrats, Eugene?
Well, oh, obviously, because it's the signature piece of legislation for Barack Obama. If it has a negative public image like it's going through now, sure, it hurts Democrats. I don't necessarily think it's been toxic, because for all the talk about how many Americans are voting and hating Obamacare, again, I mean, I'm not really concerned about how many points he won by, but a Democrat did win in Virginia. And at the height of all this so-called anti-Obamacare rhetoric, so at least in one state, that was a chance for them to actually sort of, you know, weigh in and vote in terms of the current mess in D.C. And at least on that state level, they elected a Democrat for governor. So
yeah, he defeated a Tea Party candidate.
That
Owen
always kind of makes it better for some people, Joy.
Owen, though, what about a Democrat beating a Tea Party candidate?
Well, bear in mind, he didn't win with majority. That you did have a Libertarian candidate who was propped up by an Obama backer who took 6 points. So you put those two together, and you had more people voting against the Democrats than for them, which again ends up, you know, unfortunately, the Democrat being elected in this case. But you know, you also look at the, I mean, this is frankly where the national GOP failed. They the establishment Republicans don't want to support Tea Party candidates. The folks around Washington don't want to support Tea Party candidates. The candidate there was, you know, is not exactly a dynamic person. You know, wasn't a great campaigner, but still, the national GOP put in half the money they did in previous elections. You didn't have a, you know, you didn't have the horsepower of the GOP out there campaigning for him. Christie, even if you want to go back to Christie, refused to campaign for him. So you really had, he was kind of out there on his own. Really, the only person you had was, you know, talk show host Mark Levin campaigning for him. And yet he still came in with a couple points despite all that firepower that Democrats had. So I think if you look at, if you start looking at the elections in Arkansas and Louisiana and some of these other states where Obamacare really, really polled very, very poorly, that's why those senators are scared, and rightfully so, if the GOP can get their act together and put up viable candidates and support them properly.
Well, so Time magazine put Chris Christie on its cover, and with the caption, "The Elephant in the Room." What's your reaction to that, Owen?
I think that's an apt description, I guess. You know, he is the elephant in the room, and obviously that's a jab at his weight as well. Mm-hmm. But you know, Christie is a different kind of Republican, if you will, than what we've been seeing in the past, and who's frankly been winning across the states for the last few years. He's not a Tea Party Republican. He's a brash East Coast Republican who doesn't support the Second Amendment, who doesn't, you know, who's has a lot of views, who I think we really struggle to get through a Republican primary. So again, here I think we have a few years out from a national election. We have a bunch on the left, and we have a bunch of the media really, really wanting Christie to run and really, really wanting him to be the front runner because he's a Republican they can stomach if he happens to win. But I don't think he'll be the nominee.
Yeah. So are you really rooting for Chris Christie to run, Eugene?
If I had to be honest, yes, I am. Because essentially, I really don't think he would be the, at least if things continue in the strain that they're going now and among conservative Republicans, he wouldn't be someone that could actually win in the primary part of things, and that would fracture the party as they go towards 2016, trying to find a standard bearer who can kind of solve some of the problems they're having with minorities and women and, you know, people with sensible ideas about government. And I think Christie, that's why I said he's very intriguing to me, because he's sort of this Tony Soprano figure in from New Jersey who could capture imagination the same way popular figures like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Jesse Ventura or, and I'm naming ex-wrestlers for some reason, although Arnold was a bodybuilder rather. But I see him in almost the same way people look at Obama as being a result of this real star power. I see some of that in Christie. And I think if he were to get to be the Republican nominee for president, it would scare a lot of people because, like Owen says, he is not a conservative right-wing Tea Party guy. Nobody's really sure what he is, which is also kind of intriguing.
Well, Owen, I'm not sure if you're saying that you don't want Christie for the nomination, but who would you like to see get the Republican nomination for 2016?
That's a really good question. You are right. I don't want to see Christie as the nominee, and frankly, the fact that he intrigues people like Eugene, whom I respect, but I don't think we share similar voting patterns. I think that's an accurate statement. You know, Eugene's never going to vote for Christie, so why do I care if he likes him or not? I mean, I'm looking for somebody who can appeal.
Why would you say I'm never going
to
vote for Christie?
Yeah, maybe he would.
So,
anyway, Owen, you want someone more? You want someone more conservative than Chris Christie?
Absolutely. I think, I am a conservative. I want somebody more conservative. But I think there's a lot to learn from Christie in the way he is, the way he campaigns, and the way, as Eugene said, that he is able to reach out to groups where, frankly, Republicans are failing right now. And again, going back to that Virginia race where McAuliffe won handily among single women. for instance, where that's a group where Republicans are failing right now, and they really need to have a better message there, but Christie does a good job. So I'm looking for a candidate who's conservative, but who has the campaigning instincts, if you will, of a Christie.
Yeah, and is that person out there yet?
I'm not sure, frankly. As we look around the field, there's a number of Republicans, strong Republicans from different areas, who I think are energetic and look good. And frankly, at about this time in the election cycle last time, that it looked about the same. A lot of great guys out there, and frankly, none of them ended up at the top of the ticket. So I think it's going to be an interesting race to watch. I'm not ready to throw a name out there.
Right. But Owen, do you really think that a more conservative Tea Party-like candidate for president can win a general election?
Yeah, I do, because we've seen them win in other states. I mean, even here in Wisconsin with Scott Walker, who won twice for his twice in 2 years, who wins that. I think that what we need in this country, and I think what really appeals, is that strong fiscal conservatism, restraint of budget, restraint of government interference in our lives, as we see things like the NSA, which has both sides of the aisle riled up. All these things just to restrain the federal government from being so involved in our lives. I think there's a strong message there that a strong fiscal conservative can win.
Voters in New York City elected the first Democratic mayor since 1989 in Bill de Blasio. What message do you think voters in New York were sending there, Eugene?
Well, they're New Yorkers, so who knows what kind of message they're sending, to be honest. And having known people in New York, what's interesting to me about when I think of a roster of even recent New York mayors, even going back to Giuliani and Bloomberg most recently, I really find, much like Christie, I don't see them as conventional Republican or conservative politicians, particularly in a city like New York. I don't think they could stand to, ostracize as many people as the real, extreme right-wing politicians usually do during a campaign season, because that's your electorate. It's that teeming mass of humanity in New York where you have to kind of keep everybody on your side. So New York is like, it's not really that much of a game changer, because, again, this might be the first Democratic mayor in a while, but they all seem like Democratic mayors in a sense, maybe other than Giuliani towards his real, crackheads, police state segment of mayor administration.
Oh, and any comment on the New York City mayoral race?
No, I agree with a lot of what Eugene said. I don't think New York is representative of the nation of a whole. They tend to elect what we'll call Rockefeller Republicans, if they are Republicans, that there. And they've elected a hard liberal right now. So I think we're going to see a dramatic shift in New York City policies. And it's going to be interesting to watch how that turns out.
Art in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Art.
Hi. Yeah, so Owen said that Cuccinelli didn't get support except from some commentator. But I'm reading that he got Senators Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, and Wisconsin's Governor Scott Walker to support him. So apparently their coattails are not as heavy in Virginia as one might think.
All right, Owen.
All right. The fact that a Wisconsin governor doesn't have coattails in Virginia doesn't shock me at all. And Rubio was going through his own toxic little area right then. So, the fact is we didn't get strong Republican support there. There wasn't a ton of money in that race supporting the Republican. And, he was outspent 2-1 in that race. So the fact that the guy who outspent his opponent 2-1 won by 2 points and still didn't win a majority of the vote, I think is a telling result.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about some developments in the race for governor in Wisconsin that happened this week when we come back, plus some other miscellaneous election results and other top state and national news during this edition of our Week in Review. And we'll take more of your input, more of the issues you want to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, along with our two Week in Review guests, Owen Robinson and Eugene Kane. This is the Ideas Network. Mm-hmm. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Eugene Kane and Owen Robinson. If you would like to join us, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's talk a little bit more politics. Our previous caller brought up Governor Walker going to Virginia and to campaign for the gubernatorial candidate there. There were some developments in Wisconsin this week in the race for governor. Democrat Mary Burke picked up an endorsement from Planned Parenthood this week. And a couple of strategists from President Obama's campaign last year have signed on to her campaign. So how big a threat will Mary Burke be to Scott Walker, Owen?
I think she's a legitimate threat. Clearly has, she's the chosen candidate of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. She's anointed. And if you look at her, she's really picked because of her demographics and her politics where, she's a woman. She has a business background. She has private sector experience. She has some previous government experience under Governor Doyle. But reality is she doesn't have much of a record to run on. But I think demographically she fits the mold perfectly. What I think is more interesting is how much of the hard left of the party is so disappointed in her. And if you're reading the blogosphere or Twitter or all the hard lefties who really, really fought hard a couple years ago to try to recall Walker, they're very, very disappointed in him and really looking to Vineout or somebody else who will run who will be a hard left candidate. So I think it's going to be an interesting to see if there's a primary challenge and how that shakes out.
Yeah, it's, there were some stories that Kathleen Vinehout looks more and more like she's going to run. She said she would make her decision in January. But Eugene Kane, should there be a primary for the Democratic nomination for governor in Wisconsin?
Well, if it's going to be a serious primary, I think the idea of anointing Burke is something I agree with, but I think people need to realize that it's not really being anointed by the vast majority of Democratic voters, because like Owen, I've heard grumblings, particularly in the African-American community, because once again, their input doesn't seem to have been sought on picking a candidate to go up against Scott Walker, whom many in the black community have as many grievances against as any other Democrats in the state. But as usual, I mean, at the top levels of this progressive Democratic machine in Wisconsin, there are not that many, minority voices at all, given their input. So my sense is that she will be formidable simply because, according to the recent, MU poll, I mean, if nobody had announced to run against Scott Walker, that person would be formidable because it was only basically 2 or 3 points separating anybody but Scott vote and the Democratic nominee. So,
yeah, speaking of the governor, he's also in the news this week because he was going to make a decision, or at least we thought he was going to make a decision on the proposed off-reservation casino in Kenosha. But now he's saying he's taking his time. The Menominee Indian Tribe wants to open up a gambling casino in Kenosha. The governor had said we need all Indian tribes, all 11 Indian tribes to negotiate this and to be on board with this, and that's not the case. So, Owen, what do you think is taking so long?
I think he's looking for a way out. I think that Governor Walker put forth some ridiculous criteria into how he would approve a casino, but the reality is, if you look at a Kenosha casino, it'd be a massive job generator. It's going to pull lots of money out of northern Illinois into Wisconsin. It's a great deal for Wisconsin, frankly. The only people who oppose it are those who are competing, the Potawatomi and the Ho-Chunk, who have competing casinos. So the fact that he set up this criteria where the Menominee's competitors have to approve their casino, where all 11 tribes have to agree or have consensus with a warped definition of defensive of consensus, was a ridiculous standard. And I think he's realizing that, and he's trying to step back from it, because frankly, if he doesn't approve this casino, it will be poisonous in his campaign, because the Democrats can very, very justifiably point to it and say, here's a place where Governor Walker had a chance by his sole discretion to approve a project that would generate thousands of jobs, and he said no. And I think that would be poisonous in the campaign. I think he sees that, and I think he's looking for a way out.
Well, what do you think, Eugene?
Well, I think his reputation for turning down jobs started real early in terms of turning down federal, you know, money for construction and highway and transportation. I mean, particularly, again, in the African-American community, I think that is one of their biggest complaints about this governor in terms of, the on the one hand, he'll talk about jobs, but when he's actually in a position to make some kind of bold move or statement that, frankly, goes against what he seems to be following in this right-wing playbook that's designed to get him a shot at president in 2016. I mean, that is what people that I talk to, that's what they complain about with this governor, the sense that even with the casinos, rather than sit around and make a political decision, what's best for residents of Wisconsin or in that particular area? You've got to pull the trigger on stuff like that.
Let's take a call from Terry in Madison. Hi, Terry.
Hi, good morning. You know, as you're talking about the election across the country, things are being missed. And in New Jersey, even though Christie won, there was a binding referendum that raised the minimum wage in New Jersey by an hour to $8.25. In Cincinnati, they had the Republicans push a referendum to get rid of pensions and health care for municipal employees, which got voted down handily. And in Washington State, at SeaTac Airport, they voted that the lowest person working there had to make $15 an hour. Now, this is where the people of the country are fighting back with their votes, and yet it's not being reported. And what do your people think about this? Non-reporting, and the people are talking that they don't like austerity.
Terry, thank you for bringing up those issues. I'm glad you did. Let's talk about that. These election results, I don't, a win for working people, Eugene?
Well, yeah, I think, to be fair, everybody sort of skims over the top of, you know, these post-election stories to find out who won, who lost. One thing I did notice, to be truthful, because I try to gauge what the impact of the so-called Tea Party and those kind of folks are having. And I do think if you're looking at it with, you know, any kind of objective eye, the news out of that election was that a lot of these, I don't want to describe them any derogatory way, but I think a lot of the politicians who've gotten into politics through the Tea Party are not really the kind of people that are qualified to be politicians. And it looks like they were turned back in a lot of areas. And that might be one of those, you know, unreported stories, along with, like the caller said, the story about how a lot of certain economic issues were actually decided at the voting booth, too.
Mm-hmm. Owen?
I'm interested by Eugene's comment that people aren't qualified to be politicians, because I thought we were a government of the people, which means all people who are citizens are eligible to be politicians. But that's an interesting statement. But I will tell you my favorite local election of Tuesday was the fact that in Houston they voted not to turn the Astrodome into a convention center, which means that monstrosity will come down and we'll get to watch it explode and it will be great.
Oh, you like watching buildings explode, Owen?
I like watching the Astrodome explode.
Yeah. There was also in Colorado, voters agreed to tax recreational marijuana at 25%. Some say that this tax could generate $70 million a year. So, Eugene, do you think something like that's going to catch on nationally?
Well, you know, I'm just still waiting for the idea. For them to tax it, I suppose it would have to be made legal and you can buy it in a store from a vendor. So the first receipt that I get for purchased marijuana that also has the tax included, I think that'll be an interesting day, Joy. I mean, it's hard for me to envision it right now, and I'm not saying I would do it if it did come to pass, but thinking about a tax on marijuana, that really is mainly what hits me, that there'll come a day when this previously illegal substance is being sold and it'll have a tax added to it.
Yeah, do you see that day coming, Owen?
I think that this has been an argument for a long time where we bring the sale of marijuana out of the black market, we bring it into the public market, and then at that point it is a taxable substance. And And when you look at it, you know, Colorado's tax is pretty high. Oregon's was higher. But to look at that and say, you know, they're really looking at that as a sin tax to bring it in. But it I'll be interested to see what the actual collection of that is, because you're talking about a group of individuals who consume this product, if you will, in the black market outside of the norms of society or outside of, you know, the public realm. To think that they're suddenly going to say, oh, okay, I'm going to buy this same product where I've been buying it legally for years, but now I'm going to buy it legally, but I'm going to pay 25% more to pay this tax, I think it's a bit, I don't see that happening too much. So I'll be interested to see what the actual collections are. But this really has been a strong argument of the pro-legalization crowd for a long time, is bring it out of the shadows, make it a mainstream product, make it something we can tax, make it something we can regulate. We'll see that if that can actually come to pass after it's been illegal for so many years.
Gary in Oconomowoc is with us. Hi, Gary.
Hi there. I just got a comment for Owen about the Tea Party candidates and so on, and they keep touting themselves as being fiscally responsible, but if we look back, you know, nationally, the last two big spenders we've had were George Bush II and Ronald Reagan. They're the ones that put us into this incredible financial situation we're in. You can't build an economy on a military complex, based on a military complex. And the other thing is, locally, our governor took all this money away from the state workers, and he's hurt the economy drastically. I mean, you take all this money out of the state, and you expect the economy to improve, it's not going to happen.
Owen?
Well, it's interesting that you would tie Tea Party to Reagan and Bush, because the Tea Party came way after they were in office. If you want to talk about fiscal conservatism, both of those gentlemen both did raise taxes. They both did increase spending, much to our chagrin. They did so much less than some of their predecessors. So if you look at Obama, he has raised taxes, he has raised spending, he has raised the debt far, far, I mean, magnitudes higher than Bush Jr. did or W. did. So, I mean, if you want to look at that, we can say it. I mean, frankly, we haven't had a real fiscal conservative in the White House in a very, very long time, and we need to have one. And so I share his skepticism about Tea Party candidates or any candidate, frankly, who wants to restrain spending. Even in Walker's last two budgets, we did increase spending in the state. So for all those who talk about austerity and holding back, frankly, spending is still going up, which is something I would prefer not to see.
Yeah, we're going to move on to many other issues, but just kind of wrapping up some of the major election results anyway, do you think that, I guess Owen first, whether Republicans, Democrats, or Tea Party Republicans should be worried about the trends in the country?
When you say trends in the country,
well, I mean, it just the message being sent by the voting that occurred on Tuesday, who should be feeling good today? Who should be nervous?
I think that Senate Democrats should be nervous right now, who are up for election, mainly because of Obamacare. I do think there are some demographic shifts and there are some societal shifts. The legalization of marijuana is one thing. The furthering support of gay marriage is another thing. The immigration, which I think is still a fractured thing, which we've seen no resolution to for a long time. I think there are some demographic shifts that Republicans need to address, need to find a better message for, that they need to be concerned about and need to be doing a better job about, as Christie illustrated. But overall, I think right now, if I were a politician running for election right now, if I were a Senate Democrat, I'd be scared to death.
Should Senate Democrats be scared to death, Eugene?
Well, I think the people who should be scared to death are the Tea Party folks or anybody who has affiliated themselves with the Tea Party. Because I think in this rush to make the big story the failure of the Obamacare website, people are glossing over that government shutdown that was caused by this rogue band of Tea Party Republicans that everybody identified like that. So it's not like voters don't realize these are the guys that gummed up the works. And, you know, the small percentage that see Ted Cruz as some kind of hero, I think, are going to be totally outnumbered by all the folks who remember what the hardship was, whether they experienced it personally or not, but just the general sense of discomfort being in a nation that had shut down all of a sudden. So simply because of this political bickering between these group of newly elected Tea Party folks who just wanted to kind of, you know, flex their muscles in a way that made no sense whatsoever, which even the more saner members of the Republican Party have kind of conceded, that it made no sense to take us through all that. So, yeah, I think the election did show that those folks, they're on the run. I'll say it like that.
We will talk about some new developments when it comes to equal rights in the workplace for those based on sexual orientation or gender identity, and new developments when it comes to same-sex marriage. That's coming up on this edition of The Week in Review. And we will continue to welcome your input. Our guests are Eugene Kane, a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His writings appear Sundays in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Owen Robinson, a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. It's time now for The Week in Review quiz. A public hearing was held yesterday before a state Senate committee on a bill that would legalize a certain activity in Wisconsin. What would it legalize? A public hearing was held yesterday before a state Senate committee on a bill that would legalize a specific activity in Wisconsin. What is it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you about 5 minutes or so to call in your answer. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and the winner will be given a book that we featured on the program recently. So the answer and the winner at the end of the program. Let's get back now to talking about issues during this edition of The Week in Review, talking today with Eugene Kane and Owen Robinson about the top political news stories of the week. Well, let's talk about our neighbors to the south. Illinois, set to become the 15th state to allow gay marriage. State senators okayed a bill on Tuesday of this week, and it now goes to Governor Pat Quinn for approval, who says he will sign it. Well, Eugene Kane, your reaction to this news?
Another step in towards, you know, total equality. Another step towards this new day in this country that a lot of people thought would never happen. Just a place where people are considered, you know, equal and get the same rights as everybody else.
Certainly, we have a constitutional amendment in Wisconsin, but Owen, do you see the day in Wisconsin when same-sex marriage will be recognized?
Yeah, perhaps. I think it may come at some time. Frankly, it's obviously there's been a giant shift in public sentiment this, you know, it is recently in the last, you know, 15 years. And interestingly, you see like President Obama and Hillary Clinton and these folks who were adamantly against gay marriage all of 5 years ago who are suddenly all celebrating Illinois doing this. So I think you see this as a shift of public sentiment. It's happening. I don't agree with it, but it's happening.
Well, what do you make of the U.S. Senate passing the Employment Non-Discrimination Act that prohibits discrimination in the workplace based on sexual orientation or gender identity? Oh, and it passed the Senate, but it looks like it's not going to go anywhere in the House because the Speaker, John Boehner, is opposed, says this would lead to frivolous lawsuits.
You know, frankly, I don't think people should be discriminated against for anything that has anything else to do besides their performance. I mean, if they're good at their job, they should be supported. If they're not, they should not. If they're, regardless of anything else, they should not be discriminated against. I don't know that we need Congress to validate that or not. If they want to, fine.
Eugene?
Hey, what I've always said on any kind of gay rights issue is that if you have a problem with gay marriage, then you should never, ever marry a gay person.
All right. Well, let's see. We have a caller, Mary in Middleton, who wants to change the subject for us, and that's fine. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Yes. What is the issue you'd like to bring up?
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate that very much. The issue is groundwater in Wisconsin. And most specifically, a Senate bill that's been proposed, it's SB 302. And this bill is challenging the Lake Beulah court decision. So it's, we've got two things really going on here. One is we have the Senate, at least Neil Kedzie and crowd, attempting to overturn a Supreme Court decision via the legislature. And the decision was one that charged the DNR, Wisconsin DNR, with the duty and the authority to protect the waters of the state. This bill takes the DNR's authority away to do that. So it's a combination of the threat on groundwater, which is everybody's water in Wisconsin. So that's water for home wells, that's water for lakes, that's water for streams, water used in agriculture. And the DNR has heretofore, through Statute 281, been the responsible party to permit these high-capacity wells.
I'm not sure if our guests are really familiar with this, but Owen, do you have a thought on this this bill?
Clearly, Mary is far more informed than I am. I don't know a thing about it.
Yeah. Eugene, I take it you may not either.
Well, if you want to give me 15 minutes to Google it, that's probably come up. I think it's an important subject, but the idea is that people need to be educated about this before they make any kind of reasonable statement on it, and I don't want to put myself in any kind of situation any more than I usually do to be talking about stuff I don't really have much knowledge of.
Yeah, and I don't... The state Senate Natural Resources Committee did approve a bill this week that would set limits on how much the state can regulate high-capacity water wells. Water pumping has been a hot topic in Wisconsin, with large agricultural interests and food processors pushing back against further restrictions, while environmental groups and lake property owners favor more rules for wells that draw 100,000 gallons or more of water a day. I'm taking it is that related to what Mary was bringing up, Bill? All right, so I guess it has to do with high capacity water wells, but in any case,
I'll just say ditto to that.
Okay. Governor Walker isn't saying whether he will sign a bill making it harder to force public schools to drop American Indian nicknames. He says it is not on his radar. The Senate passed the bill this week. The Assembly did so last month. So, Owen, what about this one? The governor is saying it's not on his radar to make it harder for local school districts to drop an Indian nickname or mascot.
Well, it better be on his radar now because the Senate passed it. So, you know, he now has to make a decision whether to sign it or not, or veto it or not, or what he's going to do. But I think this was a... You know, the measure that Doyle pushed through in his last term to make this ridiculous standard for mascots or whatever was really, it's unheard of. It's the only one in the country like that where you have a single person can object. It goes to a bureaucrat in DPI who can decide whether it's right or wrong. And really the burden of proof is on the school to decide or to prove whether that person is offended or not, which really goes against the due process, you know, that we have in this country. So I think this is a reasonable measure. It's a compromise bill that really puts more reasonable standards in place where, you know, multiple people have to object. There's some due process. There's some the burden of proof is on, you know, in the correct place. You know, I don't think anybody wants mascots to be offensive. I don't think anybody wants to offend people. But at the same time, anybody can be offended about anything. And to put the burden on the school district to say, you know, you have to prove you're not offending anyone. Otherwise, you have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to change over your whole, you know, scheme, if you will, your whole branding, I think was a ridiculous standard. And I think this is a good measure, and I think Walker should sign it.
What do you think, Eugene?
Well, it's interesting, Joy, but actually for my upcoming Sunday column, I managed to combine this issue, the issue of the Washington football team being accused of having, the pro football team accused of having a racist name, and the Indian casino issue, all in one column. So I think I have been following this. My take basically is that it's amazing to me that Wisconsin legislators still want to hold on to this antiquated notion of using basically people as mascots. In most of these cases where it's a name, you know, it involves a tribe or a certain image of an actual person. It's not, you know, an occupation. It's not the Vikings. It's not animals. But they always try to create a false equivalency as though, well, everybody will be offended by something. There was one writer who said recently that because NAACP, the C stands for colored, he was trying to say we shouldn't worry about Indian mascots because somebody could get offended by the colored in the NAACP. Bottom line to me is that there's a reason why people are offended. And it would seem to me school and school officials, educators, should want to begin the discussion of why, after all this time, even after your parents and grandparents all played or cheered for this particular name, we're at a point now where we're reconsidering all this. And it looks like they're resisting diversity. And I don't think the law that when somebody has a legitimate complaint that they can challenge some of these schools, I don't think that's such a bad law considering the fact that it also brings a certain amount of education to a lot of white people in Wisconsin, basically, who had never really even considered or imagined that these names were going to be one day be considered racist and inappropriate for the times.
Yeah. So, Owen, when groups like the Native American or the American Indian Education Association say that these nicknames are not only offensive but racist and hurtful, why should someone have to collect 10% of the student body to agree with that?
Well, and I agree with a lot of what Eugene said. I think we do have shifting, norms in society where there are things that we said, 40 years ago that we didn't even consider offensive that today we consider offensive, and we recognize that and we do that. And I think those are things we recognize. I think those are local issues that we need to work through. But, frankly, it really comes down to that matter of due process, where the previous law was set up to where a single individual could say, I'm offended by that, go to the DPI, and then the school had to, provide all this evidence that that person wasn't offended. It's like me going to, Eugene saying, Eugene, I'm offended by your column, and he has to go to court and prove that I'm not offended, and otherwise he has to spend thousands of dollars to rewrite his columns and republish them. I mean, it's a ridiculous standard. So I think this puts a much more rational standard in place. But I do agree with Eugene that I think that we do see shifting norms in society. I think I grew up a Cowboys fan, so I hate the Redskins too completely. So I'd be happy to see them change their names. Those are things that I think that as our society norms change, we need to adjust with that. And I think these will change. But I think we need a more rational process than this, a bureaucrat in Madison, a single bureaucrat with no appeal process, deciding that, this person is offended, so you have to spend $100,000 to change your branding. I think that puts a huge burden on the taxpayers of those districts to do those things. But I do think it's I think this is a great discussion. I think it's a positive step in moving our society in a positive direction.
All right, Aaron in Fountain City. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I am calling in because I actually feel opposite, kind of. I think if you were to take away these names from the schools, you're erasing a piece of history. I'm Native American myself, and I think that the schools are named like Warriors and Black Hawk and, those types of names, and those are some things to take pride in and remember. Because if we take away those names, we're likely to forget, And I just feel really, really strongly that should not happen. And I don't understand why it's racist when I don't see anything wrong with it, I guess.
Yeah. What about Redskins, Aaron?
Like I said, it's a part of history. If you take it away, people will forget.
All right.
And a lot of, think about the Potawatomis. And as far as, people forgetting their tribe. Because only 25 people in the world speak that language today. I mean, if we start taking away even, little pieces of the Native American culture, I can't imagine in 10 years what each tribe is going to be like. I mean,
yeah.
It's unbelievable to me.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Any thoughts on that, Eugene?
Well, I think a lot of times, particularly with these school team names, it's really more about nostalgia, a personal experience. It has nothing to do with the identity, because a lot of them are talking about mascots who are basically actual human beings, but because they're Native American, they become mascots. And you can find your odd, you know, Irishman of Notre Dame and say it's the same thing. But for the most part, it's not, particularly with a lot of the Indian nicknames. You could go back and forth on whether the Warriors is offensive, but the Marquette University basketball team doesn't call itself the Warriors anymore. Now, a lot of people who don't even remember what the Golden Eagles used to be called 20 years ago. So I just think a lot of times I opt on the side of let's progress as a people, as a more tolerant nation, because that'll open up more for everybody.
Let's move on to another issue. There was a hearing in the Assembly this week on a bill that would require voters to show voter ID at the polls. This is a slightly different one than the law that's already held up in the courts. Eugene, what do you make of this renewed effort to get a voter ID on the books?
No, I've been convinced that eventually, you know, after all the challenges are worn out, they'll get something on the books. And all I can do is, you know, be relatively confident that it won't have as much of an upheaval as the people who have been pushing this would like it to have, which means sort of, you know, ratchet down the minority participation in voting, which I think a lot of the real photo ID laws is strictly designed to do. So I hold out for the best, but again, I wonder, given what everybody knows about the level of so-called voter fraud and the idea that people are trying to make it like it's, you know, some widespread conspiracy, when in fact there's never been anything to really back that up other than, you know, anecdotal isolated incidents. It's just amazing to people, amazing to me that people buy into the notion that most people who show up to vote on election day are not U.S. citizens with a perfect right to vote, whether or not their personal circumstances have managed to get them in a point where maybe they don't have all the valid, you know, ID or anything. They're not like buying a video or renting a car. They're showing up to vote, and they're American citizens. And the Constitution says all of them have the right to vote.
Quick hit on that one, Owen.
Well, first off, I think Eugene's accusation that the effort of voter ID is to ratchet down minority voting is ridiculous. But if there are isolated incidents, it is the people who don't have IDs. And the fact is, you know, Democrats have been scouring the country to find people who don't have IDs or have trouble getting them. They find one or two here or there. It's such a vast minority of people. Frankly, you need an ID to function in today's society. It's a reasonable standard, and I think it's a reasonable thing that we need to do to be able to make sure our elections are as legitimate as possible.
It's time now to congratulate Jim and Brookfield, our Week in Review quiz winner. What activity would be legalized in Wisconsin under a bill that received a hearing yesterday in a state Senate committee? Rubber duck races. Nonprofit groups typically race these little ducks with numbers on the bottom as fundraisers, but apparently it's not completely legal. This bill would make duck races legal in Wisconsin. So congratulations to Jim and Brookfield. You will receive one of the books we featured on the program recently. I was going to ask Owen and Eugene if you thought this was a good bill, but we're out of time, so we'll have to leave it there. Eugene Kane is a columnist whose writings appear on Sundays in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. Thanks very much to both of them for being with us. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this hour, and thanks to Christy Shepherd for on-air production. Christy Taylor, this is the Ideas Network.